Welcome everyone to What the Force, and for those tuning in for the first time, I'm Marie-Claire Gould, and I had the pleasure of recording several panels that would not be on the big screen because they were at the same time as other large panels, including Claudia Gray's So You Are a Fanfic Writer Who Wants to Go Pro, and this Writer's Roundtable, which actually had a surprise ending, which I'm really happy to be able to present to everyone. I really, really enjoyed this panel. It focused on five writers: Claudia Gray, Justina Ireland, Daniel Jose Older, Kevin Scott, and the amazing Charles Soule. And throughout the course of the panel, everybody could feel the chemistry of these writers. Like, they had all been hanging out before. This wasn't the first time that they had met, which led up to the really amazing conclusion about the project that they had all been assigned to work on, including heading to Skywalker Ranch and the big tease of them heading there and working on Project Luminous together. So tune in with us and listen to what they said.
So what we wanted to do today is have a writer discussion with all the fine folks here, talk a little bit about what they're doing in a galaxy far, far away. But before we do that, I thought it would be good for you guys to learn a little bit more about our panelists, because we really do have, you know, an all-star panel here. But it's an interesting and a diverse group. So for the panelists, raise your hand if you were ever in the military. Also, raise your hand if you were ever a paramedic. Raise your hand if you were ever a lawyer. And then raise your hand if you're British.
Hello.
So yeah, you can see it's a pretty diverse group. I want to hear more about all of your stories. First up, what got you interested in writing?
For me, that goes so far back. I don't know that I can really put my finger on it. Like, I always loved to read, and I think once you love stories as a little kid, if you figure out some people get to make up stories, then you're in love with it. I actually kept a diary when I was really, really young, and now it's mostly incredibly embarrassing. But there was an entry that I wrote after I'd seen Superman, the movie, so I was all of 8. And I just said, I keep making up sequels inside my head. So, yeah, it was always there. I started much later, and I actually started when I was in the Army, because one of the things that's true about the Army is there's a lot of like standing around doing nothing. Is you're just waiting for things to happen. You're waiting for the next mission, you're waiting for someone to tell you to do something when you're newer, or you're just waiting to figure out what the next thing is. And so I found myself making up stories in my head as I was waiting, and then I would tell my battle buddies, which is like the people you serve with, these stories afterwards. And they were usually about commanding officers, because commanding officers always suck. And so they would be like, oh my god, that's so funny, you should totally write that down. And so when we would work missions, because I was not like a woo-hoo, like just take the line infantry, I was military intelligence, so we did a lot of sitting at desks, which is the best way to be an Army. I would write these stories out, and I would pass them around to folks, and they would be like, this is so funny, and then every once in a while someone would be like, who wrote this? And I'm like, this is me. How I got started like telling stories is just telling stories to my friends, which I think is how most people get started telling stories.
That's really similar to me, actually, because I did always love stories when I was a kid, and in fact, certainly making up stories with Star Wars action figures, we had to do back, you know, which explains a lot about me. But yeah, that's definitely like the origin of storytelling for me. And then I just always wanted to do it with my life. But also, like being in the military, when you're a paramedic, you know, it sounds really exciting, and everyone at parties is like, "Oh my god!" That's awkward. But it's also really boring, and you spend a whole lot of time just sitting around waiting for something terrible to happen, really. And in that time, you reminisce about all the terrible things that have happened before that you weren't dealing with. And paramedics are amazing storytellers. And so not only did I just like have time on my hands sometimes, and other times not, and sometimes I would use that time to actually write the books I was working on. But also I learned a lot about storytelling and the art of storytelling, from my coworkers, because we would just talk to each other and remind each other of the amazing things that had happened. So that's always been there.
For me, it was final fiction. New stories, Doctor Who was a massive thing. The trouble with my fan fiction was it sort of spilled into schoolwork, so I used to get very bored very quickly. So if I was writing something on the Roman Empire, I always thought we should have the Daleks at the end. And my parents were called into school to say that stormtroopers in the Second World War weren't the kind of stormtroopers. Quite armor.
So I wrote stories while growing up, different things, different stuff in high school, whatever. But the thing that really kicked it into gear for me was going to law school. Because as Mike mentioned earlier, I'm an attorney. I don't practice anymore the way I used to. But when I went to law school, I graduated from law school. I took the bar exam. I passed, which was cool. And then I realized that now I would actually have to start being a lawyer. And I was like, oh no, what did I did not think this through, or I did not plan this out very well. And so I knew literally from the day that I finished taking the bar that I had kind of maybe started on a path that was maybe not the path that I wanted to be on for the rest of my life. So a lot of times people take like a bar trip, it's called. So after you take the test, you go and you go someplace for a couple weeks or a week or whatever, and you just sort of don't think about the law at all. And so on that trip, I went to like a stationery store and I bought a longhand notebook and I just started writing my first novel that day, because the idea was, I knew I was going to have to work 80-hour weeks, 60-hour weeks, whatever, like a ton of time as an attorney, but I could always get 15 minutes in on the subway. I could always get half an hour in after, before I passed out at home. And so, a year later, I had a novel done in longhand in those notebooks. I had six of them by the end. And so I was like, if I can do that while I'm working as a first year or second year attorney, I can do it. So I just didn't stop, and here I am on this panel today.
A lot of you came to it later on, right? You had full-on careers. Was it just the, Charles, you just spoke a little bit about this with the idea of, oh, I'm a lawyer, lawyer.
Yeah, it was a bad day.
Was there, Charles, that was your story, but was there more in specific turning point where you said, no, I'm going to be a writer, this is what I want to do, or for any of you?
For me, it was actually partially because for most of my 20s, I thought I would tell stories through music. Because I was a bass player and I was a composer. Still a bass player. Are you guys musicians? Any of you guys write?
I do a lot of guitar composition.
Really?
Singing. Mm-hmm.
Shoot.
Cap, what about you?
I hear you.
Anyway, we should start a band. I sing amazingly in the shower. So I was playing music, but as many of you know, like getting musicians together, as we're about to find out, is a big pain in the ass. And so it was just like constant wrangling for people and schedules, and then getting people to gigs, and then I was doing work, soundtrack work for like small-time movie makers and puppeteers, and assorted other people who couldn't pay me very well. And so I was like, if I write a book, it would just be me and the laptop. And that just sounded so sexy. No one's ever said that before, but it really does. It was like, that's it. So I just, it's like Charles said, like if you just put in the time, you know, that idea of just like it being a question of time. Like I know, I understand story on some level and I know I have stories to tell. So let me sit down with this laptop and do it. And it was a very clear moment. It was like New Year's Eve as I turned, I was about to turn 29. And I just was like, let me try this writing thing. And I started writing a book, Shadow Shaper, which is, you know, there it is.
For me, it took a really long time, and it was all about the fact that I had psyched myself out. I loved the books, I loved reading so much, and I had, you know, but I went to law school, and I didn't figure it out at the bar exam, I figured it halfway through my second year. It's like, oh, this has been not a good choice. And also, I knew that, like, the debt I had incurred, I had basically already bought a Ferrari and driven it off a cliff. And I was like, well, I need to just finish the degree so I have some hope of paying this off in this lifetime. So I was just going through it and was not encouraged, which is when I began writing fanfic. It's happened to be right when the X-Files was on the air, so. Obviously, no one fucking Scully needed a kiss, like that was. But I developed this habit. It just seemed impossible to me that I could do that. And I didn't know that I did this. I wasn't ever conscious that I did this. But anytime I finished a book I really loved, I would think to myself, you could never write a book that good. Like, we do this to ourselves, you know? And it took forever, and I, you know, law didn't work out, okay. I went into magazine journalism in the year 2000, which is hilarious. That's a lot of choice. You know, and then I ended up in law firm marketing, which is just as glamorous as you always dream. You know, but I kept writing, and I kept writing, and then I finally managed, I went and reread a lot of books that I'd read when I was sort of too young to really get them, and one of them was Lolita, and I went back and read that, and it was just blown away. You know, how dare Nabokov, like his fifth language, English, like this incredible book that's just, you know, emotionally overpowering and is beautifully constructed down to the sound of the syllables in every sentence. You know, and I finished the book, and that little voice said, you know, you can never write a book that good. And then this other voice said, well, neither can anybody else. And all of a sudden, it was this liberating thing. It was like, I don't have to try to write the greatest book that was ever published. What if I just tried to tell a story I could tell? So, and I didn't get there until my mid-30s, but I got there.
You're very polite.
I know. So I didn't start writing until after my daughter was born, which was about 11 years ago on this dark and stormy night. No, it wasn't dark and stormy at all, but the labor sucks. But one of the things that happens when you have a kid, and this doesn't happen as much to men, but women know this, is you kind of lose your identity. Like, people stop talking to you as a person. You're now a vessel. And so, as this was happening as I was pregnant, it was kind of terrifying to, like, you know, I was still on active, I was still on active duty. I was in the National Guard at that point, but I was on active duty guard. And so I was still going to work every day, like, big and pregnant, in an AC, in a military uniform. And I found that, like, I was no longer, by this time, I was an officer, even though, you know, I hated it. y'all can only hate. And I was no longer, like, Lieutenant Ireland. I was just now, like, how far along are you? Can I touch your belly? And, like, and I'm like, you know, I've been a soldier, you know, all of my 20s. And so it was kind of like terrifying to me that I was going to push out this person and then I was no longer going to exist. It was all going to become this other person. So I decided I needed to do something big. And so first I did everything but a thesis and a master's in history because I don't know if anybody has gone and done all the master's work. The classwork is great, but then when you sit down to write like a 100-page paper, you're like, this shit sucks. I hate history. What I started doing instead was writing books. I started writing stories. And I first it started out, I wanted to write like a book of short stories for my daughter because I was like, you know, girls traditionally in stories don't get cool stories. Like we get, when I was a kid, Dealing with Dragons by Patricia Reed was like my favorite book because I wanted dragons to happen, so I don't have to marry this over here. And that to me was like earth-shattering. So I started writing these stories, and about the time, my husband was like, have you heard about this book, Twilight? Isn't it bananas? Have you even seen this? And similar to Claudia, that, who read a great book and was like, I'm never going to do this. I did the opposite. I said, this book is trash. I can write better trash than this.
For me, I sort of cheated because I became a magazine journalist straight out of university. I had a great time traveling the world, meeting people, doing amazing things, writing about it. And then progressed in the industry, became a features editor, became a deputy editor, became a magazine editor, which means you just stop writing because you start sending people. So before I was going to Japan, I was coming over here to the States, I was riding tanks, not always at the same time. I'm writing about that. Then I was sending other people to Japan, I was sending other people to the States, I was putting other people in tanks, and it was getting to the point where I was doing nothing. And there's a great bit of advice, never quit your day job. And I forgot about that one day. And my wife, and we just had our second child, and I sort of quit the day job. I went home and went, great news! And she's a very forgiving woman. because I had to force myself, because I knew that I was going to be on that path forevermore. If I stayed there, I'd be a publisher, and then I would never do it. And even when I was being a magazine journalist, that wasn't quite normal. That wasn't quite the writing I wanted to do, but it was sort of, it was the comfortable thing I could do. And so I needed to scare myself, and boy did I.
I will say, I also briefly edited a magazine during my long pinball machine of a career. I did learn one thing that, sadly, you guys, like, now I know this from the other end, but whenever you give a writer a deadline, they look through your soul to the actual last day, and they know it, and it's not going to be there before then, no matter what. And I'm really sorry that I've used that power for evil, but...
The thing that I would say about, I started writing seriously, trying to write seriously when I realized that I'd made a mistake about the law thing. But obviously, I didn't get out of the law really quickly, and so I was writing for years and years and years while I was practicing law. That first novel in longhand didn't actually go anywhere. Like, I got an agent, but then it didn't get bought. So, like, all those years of work making it just didn't go anywhere. But writing for me was always, it always felt like freedom, right? Because when you're a lawyer, your job is to understand all the boxes of society, all the ways that society's rules work, and to put things in boxes and make sure they stay in boxes and make sure that all that is incredibly locked down. Whereas writing for me was always just this, like, literally anything could happen for me personally. Within a story I was writing, it was always freedom, 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 freedom. And so it didn't matter almost. I mean, I wanted that book to sell, but it didn't matter because of the joy it was giving me along the way. And the great thing about writing is that that's still how I feel now. Like, when I'm working on a project of my own, when I'm working on a Star Wars project, if I ever do another one, like, it's always freedom, and it just feels like joy. There's nothing else like it.
So, for the aspiring writers out here, do you guys have any best practices, any tips, any...
Don't quit your day job.
Or do, after you have two children. That's amazing motivation to write.
It was pure fear. I have to go.
Here you are. Well, I love what Claudia said, because I had a similar moment, and it's something I always kind of like keep in the forefront of my mind, like a talisman, because it was so profound to me and it was so simple. But I think we do get in our own way a lot, and I think it is that voice that, you know, whoever you are, there's generally going to be a voice just being like, you shouldn't be there, you know, you shouldn't waste your time writing. It should just be a hobby, you know, go do this, whatever. And for me, it was like, oh, you know, writers are like old, dead white men, and that's it, you know. And I was like, that's going to be a challenge for me for a number of reasons. So, like, you know, I struggled with that, and I was also like, if I'm going to write, it has to be this great, you know, similar thing. But what I was doing was going home and blogging about all the ridiculous things that would happen on the ambulance, you know, the night before, and all the wild stories that I was a part of, and the people that I met. And it was really easy, and I would just do it, and it would take like you know, 10 minutes, I would just write this story, and I would have some medical knowledge in there, and I'd have a little joke, and someone died, you know. And but they were good. Like, they're still on my website, and they were, and people were like, this is great. And then I was like, you know, if I just made up something, it would be fiction. And I was like, holy crap, is it literally that straightforward? I don't, it's not easy, but is it like really just what, and I wasn't, you know, the story is the root of writing at the end of the day, not pretty sentences, not metaphors, story. That's what we love about everything that we love. And it really was just such a lightning strike to be like, just tell the story. I was like, if I keep making stuff up, that will be a book. A fiction book. And that's, you know, so I just constantly try to remind myself, when I get stuck, just tell the story. That's your one job as a writer. And when you lean into that, it actually becomes very fun, because telling stories is what we love to do.
You know, there's always... They always say, you know, if you write, you're a writer. But there's always a flip side. You have to write. It's really easy to talk about being a writer. To this day, I am better at that.
That's not true.
Those of you who are at the workshop, forgive the repeat on this, but there is no way for you to find your voice but through writing. You've got to get in there and do it, and you can't get discouraged too early. You're probably going to write 10,000 bad pages before you come up with one where you're like, yeah, that actually says what I want to say. Yeah, mine were mostly about Mulder and Scully kissing. you have to find your voice, you have to figure out who you are as a writer, and you're not going to get there without putting in the time. And it's really easy to say, I don't have time to write a book. And I always say, I'm a full-time writer, and I don't have time to write a book. You know, there are always other things grabbing at you and wanting your time. It has to be important enough for you to sit down and dedicate yourself to it, to the point where you're not making yourself go right. That's the thing you do when people aren't making you do anything else. There's no substitute for that kind of practice and commitment.
You guys still write every day if you're not on deadline? Do you write just for yourselves?
Yeah.
Yes, but not every day. I think it's really important that you not browbeat yourself if you're writing every day. Like, if you write every day, that's great. But if you don't, you're still a writer. And that's important.
My advice.
That's fine.
My advice is that all writing advice is bad advice unless it works for you. This is the only way to do it. Butt in chair every day, 2,000 words. I don't write the same amount of words. I try to get 1,000 words every day, because if I don't write, it's like eating well. Like, if I eat like cupcakes for breakfast, the rest of my day is pretty much screwed. It's going to be cupcakes all day. It's about maintaining habits. There's like this whole theory that you do something consistently for 30 days, it's easier to keep doing it. I have yet to see that it's true, because it is always hard to sit down and write for me. But I also teach writing at the college level, and my students they all work, but the face of the modern college student is different. Like, a lot of those kids are not going to college, and that's it, that's all they're doing. They're working full-time jobs, some of them have children, most of them have family details that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And my whole thing is always just like, figure out like the one thing you want to accomplish that day. If the one thing you want to accomplish that day is writing an outline for a story, if the one thing you want to accomplish that day is like revamping a kissing scene, whatever it is, it's something small and manageable, and just like figure out, carve out 15 minutes to do that, because then it gets easier to do the other stuff. And also, again, if you hear writing advice, you're like, that's stupid advice, it's stupid advice. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work.
I think that linked to that, the idea, yes, writing, there are different levels of writing, because there's obviously writing the words,
right,
but then there's the writing that goes over your head. I mean, when you're wandering around, you're thinking.
Right.
And part of being a writer is the fact that it's very hard to switch that off, you know, and you go over and over and over things. And as Justina said, it's that thing of finding something you can just push it on a little bit more. And that's the important thing, I think. It hasn't got to be every day or every other day or every week, but there has to be a moment, if you really want to do it, that you can look back and say, yeah, I moved it. I've moved it forward.
Yeah, I think to echo what the other folks are saying, I think that writing doesn't have to be a novel. Writing doesn't have to be a massively completed project, right? Like, I'm a firm believer that when you're starting, you start with what you can get your arms around. You know, like, writing is a craft. It's an instrument that you have to learn how to play. And writing a novel is like, you know, composing is, you know, I'm not great with metaphors, you know? But it is, like, composing a symphony, it's the highest level thing, and you have to balance 15 million things at the same time, and you don't have to do that on day one, right? I think, you know, when I'm talking to people about writing comics, which is a lot of what I do, I'm like, don't try and write a 75-issue maxi series from the jump, right? You write a one-page or two-page story about a specific idea, about somebody asking somebody on a date, somebody, you know, getting in a fight, something about it's raining, and then there's something revolving that's raining. And then you get good at all of those different little bits and pieces, and then when the time comes to write a story about someone asking someone out on a rainy day, and then a fight breaks out, you've got all the tools there because you've done the small bits. And so writing is a long, long path that we're all on, still, and I imagine we'll all be on until the day we die, and it's just steps. It's all individual steps. So you don't have to do the whole path in a day, right? Just take steps.
And also, don't compare yourself to other people, which I think is the biggest problem. But like, even at any point in your career, you're always comparing yourself to, well, that person's done this, and that person has done that. Just worry about what you're doing.
Yeah,
it's more about yourself. Yeah, be inspired by other people.
Right.
Absolutely be inspired. You know, see that person go, I want to be that kind of person, but I don't want to be that person.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's a big difference.
We should start a band.
Yeah, envy is really poisonous because writing is not a zero-sum game by any measure. You know, in fact, like, people who are writing things like you, you know, it's sort of more like the rising tide lifts all boats, you know.
Exactly.
People tend to read similar types of books, so sitting around going like, oh, I wish I had books that might be doing even better. It's like, yeah, they're probably actually creating a bigger audience for your book, so relax.
Right, like, this is my whole thing about Twilight. Like, I think Twilight is trash. I'm like, I understand why people like it, but I still think it's trash. But however, it completely opened up the young adult genre or category. And, you know, my books now that are not my not Star Wars books, they are exist and they can succeed because that audience was built.
Yeah, I certainly would not have my job if not for the Twilight books. And so
yes.
I just kind of like.
All right, let's talk a little more specifically about Star Wars now.
Yeah.
For a galaxy far, far away, what appeals to you guys about it? What do you love about Star Wars?
Ewoks.
It's like my go-to answer. I just want to write Ewoks all the time, and everyone's like, no one wants that many Ewoks. Just, you know, like, I want that Ewoks.
We want murder bears!
For me, there's so many things, but the answer that always jumps into my head first is the fact that the spaceships are dirty, and it seems so small, and I think we also all love it. But I just feel like that was such a turning point in science fiction, and you know, for it to not everything to not be so sparkly and clean, and down to the characters themselves being really complicated. And even though it is a story of good versus evil, there's so many shades of gray within that. There's such a spectrum of humanity in you know, to this day in all the movies. And all the stories and all the books and comics, that's really what brings it to life, is that it's very human. Like, people don't pick up after themselves, huh? And other people have to deal with that, Lando. And vice versa, you know, the same people. And I love that. You know, I will always love that. Return of the Jedi was the first movie I saw in the movie theater. I was 3, which makes me 14. And, you know, like, and it changed my life. And at the time, obviously, I wasn't like, I love that the spaceships are dirty. But I was like, oh my God, you know, there's a whole other world. There's Ewoks. And actually, the Rancor, which made me run out of the theater screaming, but then come back again and again and again and make my parents take me. And I left the theater every time when the Rancor was coming. But eventually, I made it to stay, and now I get to write my Rancor.
For me, Star Wars is fun. It's fun. It can be heartbreaking. It can rip your soul out. But at the end of the day, it's about fun, adventure, Ewoks, monsters, and excitement. And all the stuff I've been trying to do in Star Wars is about this amazing opportunity is to always remember, first and foremost, that Star Wars is fun, because that's why I loved it when I was a kid.
The answer that I gave the first time I was ever asked this question is still the truest thing, which is Star Wars came out when I was 7, which apparently makes me like 90 zillion years old. But basically, that shattered my brief and fragile relationship with reality right there. It was over. You know, immediately it was like, well, there are things much more interesting to think about, you know, than whatever I had going on. You know, it's like, far. And I also think that, like Daniel said, you know, we were young enough that we didn't necessarily, we weren't able to sort of articulate this, but, you know, George Lucas is like a world builder, like the two great world builders, really kind of the 20th century, Tolkien and Lucas, you know? That universe, we've had so much built on it since, but still, just when you saw A New Hope and that's all you had, you still understood this was a place that had history. This was a place that had these different cultures that bumped into each other. This was a place where there were a lot of different sort of avenues of life going on. You sensed that.
Yeah.
And it made it feel so much more real and immersive because of it. And I think that's always been the huge draw, is that it's a world built so intricately that you feel like you could go into it and understand it.
And do bets.
And do bets, yeah. And do bets.
For me, Star Wars it's a family thing, right? So within the films, there's always families and found families, like actual lineages, which may or may not work out for the people involved in them, as we've seen with the Skywalker clan. But also, you know, these groups of people who are very different coming together and becoming families, which is within the stories themselves. But for me, I mean, Star Wars was always there growing up. It was something that my siblings and I always. It's something that we shared even as our lives have diverged. Like when the prequels were coming out, we all flew to be in the same, or traveled to be in the same place so we could watch them together. And we still do that to the extent we can with the new movies when, you know, we live all over the place, but we try to come together for them. And, you know, my parents are gone, but like growing up, they were like, I have very vivid memories of between A New Hope and Empire of my dad sitting us down and telling us bedtime stories. About what was going to happen after the end of New Hope, and what he thought was going to happen in Empire. I mean, he made up things that, you know, he made up an ice planet, whatever. And so, like, he, I don't know what kind of inside scoop he had, but he seems to know a lot about Empire ahead of time. But it was just great. So I have memories from the very beginning all the way to now that are connected to my family and the families within these films, and the new families that we make as we're creating the stories too. Which is nice. I hope that's not too sentimental for you guys.
I'll talk about it all. For me, I grew up Star Wars, and then I've rediscovered Star Wars through my daughters. Because I tried to get them to watch Star Wars for so long, and it wasn't happening. And then they discovered Rebels. Dad, is this a Star Wars thing? And I said, I don't know, I'll sit down and watch it with you. And within about 10 minutes, I thought, oh, yes. And then the floodgates opened. And so for the last few years, everything that I've experienced in Star Wars is through the eyes of these two girls as well. And it's been amazing. And it's reminded me what it was like when I was a kid and discovering it for the first time.
Other than secrecy and not being allowed to talk about stuff, which we will get to later, what has been either the most challenging or rewarding experience so far as you guys have written Star Wars?
The most rewarding thing for me has been that Star Wars books reach non-readers. People who don't read regularly. You know, I've had people email or come up and say, you know, I hadn't read a book in 10 years. Or I even had one person who's like, I have never finished a novel. You know, they'll try because they love Star Wars and they're familiar with it. And it's incredibly rewarding to have somebody actually fall in love with books because of that. And that's their way in. More than one of them have said, like, and now I read all the time, or now I'm looking for more. And, like, that's just hugely rewarding. The only, like, sort of real downside, I think, is, you know, I spent the majority of my life from about 18 on, you know, right there. You know, I was a fangirl, and I went to conventions, and I did all the things, and I wrote all the fanfic, and I got to go around and do that and argue online with people about, you know, fictional people and how they might feel about things.
You missed it.
That's the thing. thing though, like I can't really do that anymore. If I'm saying that I'm myself, the people are like, oh, you're throwing your weight around. You're like, how am I? I don't have any weight with pushing daisies. What are you talking about? Or whatever we would be discussing. But it's different. You've stepped over some kind of a line there. Or, you know, sometimes I'm just being, you know, I have my, you know, shield, my cloak on. It's like, oh, I'm a little panicked person. You don't know talking about these things. But I remember I had somebody and they had said something, and this was all theoretical. I knew nothing about it. But you know, they were like, Star Wars, this thing is gonna happen. I was like, I really don't think so. And they came back and they were like, well, I don't know if you know who Pablo Hidalgo is. And then like thing Pablo absolutely did not say. It was basically like Pablo had said egg, and this person was like eggs Benedict. You know, and at that moment I was like, in one moment. And at that moment I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I'm gonna give it up. And don't get me wrong, I love doing this. This is awesome. But being a fan was really awesome too, and I do miss it.
For me, to tee up a little bit what Charles said, you know, it's the welcome surprise, I guess you could say. I just had no idea what to expect from the folks who do this. And from the people you see on the stage, to Mike, to the folks that you don't often get to meet, who are behind the scenes, the Shaper over there, you know, the all these folks are like really, really good people, and they're fun to work with, and they are passionate about storytelling, and they're passionate about being good humans, and they're good at it, both of those things. Mm-hmm. And that's something you just don't find all the time, and you certainly don't walk into a greater room expecting, unfortunately. And so I didn't know what to expect. I didn't have like negative feelings, but I just didn't know what it was going to be. But everyone is so warm and real and funny and really good at their jobs in terms of creativity and in terms of story craft and what Star Wars is about and making it happen. Like, that has just been such a fulfilling experience. Like, as great as writing a book is, you know, writing a book with a whole team around you, you know, like helping you out and being a part of it and adding in their bits and everything is like just a really, it's just a really wonderful way to be in the creative world. And so that's been the real pleasure of this whole experience, I think.
And we can say the same thing about each and every one of you on stage here. I mean, we're not going to hustle really good, so thank you.
I think it links really into what the guys have said. For me, writing Star Wars Adventures comic for IDW has been incredible because at conventions, I've had kids coming up with comics in their hands, excited about comics. And I said it before, but that's how I experienced Star Wars for the first time. Like, before I saw the films, I read comics with Han Solo and a big green rabbit. Fast forward 40 years, and I'm writing stories about Han Solo and a big green rabbit, and kids are reading it, it's amazing. And so, yeah, for me, that's the exciting thing. And, you know, as I said, it's the Fallon family. It's the Fallon family of people up here, the Fallon family of being here in celebration, you know. Coming over to stay, spending time here, I mean, that's all incredible, and it's because of Star Wars.
I mean, I would just say, you know, it's what I was talking earlier about the freedom of writing, right? Freedom of writing Star Wars in particular, is that, you know, there's a weight to it because it's something that I think, I don't know if you guys feel this way, but when I read or experience or, you know, play or see whatever really, really good Star Wars story, it doesn't feel like a story, it feels like history that you're reading. It feels like the mythology that you know, and you're just finding a chapter of this mythology that you haven't found before. And so when you're doing it, like I felt this particularly on the Vader book that I worked on, which was a fantastic experience. But I felt like, man, this is a character that is one of the most recognized and you know, beloved, whether that makes sense or not, considering who he is, characters in all of pop culture. And I was writing a chapter of his life that was like a kind of an important one, like right after he gets into a suit and everything. And so I wanted to. It was just like, man, I can't screw it up. I have because. This is because of the way the canon works now, like that story, whether I did a good job or a bad job, that was going to be the story. And so the weight of that is almost the downside of it, but it's also the upside of it. Because if you can do it, it's like it's such a motivation. It's like quitting your day job when you just had two kids. You feel like you have to get it right, not just for yourself, but for all the creators who have worked on Star Wars before, for all the creators who are going to come after you and have to use that story piece that you've done, and most importantly, for all of you guys who are experiencing it and want that same rush of, oh, this is the history that I want, this is what I want to feel, this is what I want to see, I want to hear John Williams' music running through my head while I read it or see it or experience whatever. And so getting to that point, like pushing yourself to go there, is just one of my favorite things about working in this world.
Now, you guys write a variety of different formats, right? We've got, you know, adult novels, YA novels, middle grade, chapter books, kids comics, adult comics, etc. Have you found one format to be more challenging than another? I think, Cav, I will look to you, I think, for, I know the Choose Your Destiny books are not typical.
Yes. When we first started talking about them, they weren't Choose Your Destiny books. They were
books.
And so we were playing the Han and Chewie book, and then right at the last minute, there was an email going, by the way, it's going to be Choose Your Adventure book. You know how to do that, don't you? And of course I went, oh, yeah. And I literally ripped Choose Your Own Adventure books to pieces to try and wrap it together and work out, reverse engineer how these things work. So that was a learning experience. But, you know, people seem to enjoy them, and I now enjoy doing them.
I'm currently, not for Star Wars, but working on my first graphic novel. And that is a big learning experience, and it has been great to talk to some people on this panel that have done comics and get some advice, because like you hear the rules, like you can trust the images to tell the story, but there's a difference between knowing the rule and actually being able to flow with that in your writing. And it's been a steep learning curve, but I've really enjoyed it, and I think, honestly, it's going to improve my prose, too. It's like, I do over-rely on dialogue a little bit. I need to pull back. I can make that a little sparer. So that was the most challenging format I've worked in yet, but it's been really rewarding. I'm looking forward to doing more.
I can just say that the difference between writing a short story, like the one that I did for, from a certain point of view, and then writing a full-length novel, like Last Shot, it's just so exciting to be able to stretch out in a world that's already so full. And, you know, I love short stories and there's so much you can do with them, but it was really fun to go from that extraordinarily condensed form, you know, where you're just in this, like just this moment, you know, in someone's life, to being able to be like, rah, we're going like all the way back to this period, and then we're jumping forward to this period, and then, you know, all of this, these different lifetimes kind of like clashing and coming together. And there was such a joy in just being able to, like, just, you know, have fun with all of that space. It was great.
And what do you guys want to read from Star Wars? Like, as fans, what are you looking for? What do you want to see? Don't say Ewoks.
Ewoks with blasters.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say Ewoks. No, I was going to say, I really want a Poe Dameron YA novel. There's got to be a point where he tried to find the first time and it was a shit show. And I want to see that. Right? I want to see that awkward, like, 15-year-old Poe trying to figure out how, like, to get his hair just swoopy just from the
I'd like an Empress Nest book. No offense, Solo. And like, that was amazing, and we were all like, I don't know. And Val did it, so. Yeah. Anyway, Empress Nest book, yeah.
I want to read what happens when Vader meets Maul.
Like a Harold and Maude mashup with Darth Vader.
Yes.
Harold and Maude meet.
I've gone on record about this many times as my favorite Star Wars character is Palpatine. And I would love like a deep dive into that guy, like you know, written. I don't know, in a way that still preserves a lot of his mystique and all the things that make him awesome, but like him from inside his head a little bit, which maybe is a bad idea, I don't know, but I would read that in a minute.
answer this because every single one, like, yeah, this would be great, but I want to write it. I really want an espionage novel during the Clone Wars that's going to involve both Obi-Wan and Padme, but I want to write it.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Would you write that?
Nice little Republic novel, like, that actually just makes me really possessive. That question was not really the best thing.
But I
want to
write the
pro
novel.
Yeah.
I think we all just pitch what we want to write.
That's not where I was going with this.
Greenland.
And that's the end of the panel.
But well, we kind of got the outlines to you, like,
yeah.
Now.
It's in my back.
You know what? Let's take a different. Beautiful flower.
Skywalker Ranch.
This is. We have to get away from what you guys are doing.
That's pretty.
A little peace and tranquility.
I don't know if anyone recognizes that location. There's another shot.
Skywalker Ranch.
Beautiful Skywalker Ranch.
That is the main house of Skywalker Ranch.
Another nice shot. Beautiful?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had the opportunity, and I wanted to just share a little bit with you guys. This is our, you know, family vacation slideshow time of the presentation. This is the view from the porch of Skywalker Ranch. It is really beautiful. That building over there in the middle, you can see it is Skywalker Sound. That's where they do a lot of the sound editing and scoring. And panelists, you can jump in if you know any of this. If anyone recognizes it.
Majestic Lake Ewok.
That is correct. Another shot of the mist rising. It is. So.
How did that happen?
What is Photoshop?
Oh my god!
So this is you guys in front of Majestic Lake Ewok.
The internet is great.
What were you guys doing at Skywalker Ranch?
Nothing.
Just holding white folders.
I can be totally honest about this part of the answer. I spent a good 75% of the time going, oh my god,
it's so amazing.
Alright, so you know what, that's for a lot of folks who might not get the opportunity to hear about what it's like up at Skywalker, if you guys want to share a little bit of what that experience was like to be at the ranch.
Oh man.
If you were so much at the main house as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, we look like a family. That is hilarious.
We almost look like we were taking on each other's mannerisms, but it almost looks like warmer, almost like a different time. Huh.
like last September, maybe.
Through those doors is the most amazing library in the universe.
Yes, like, that's true.
It's like walking into Hogwarts. It's just there's knowledge and art and stuff just around you.
And a very intense library. Like, your costume was real.
Walking into that library, sort of a few times in my life, I have felt the actual physical experience of joy where it hits you like it was that.
And
I'm the phantom of the ranch.
There was a moment when she said, "You can move around," and we were like, "Can we?"
The thing about Skywalker Ranch is that I've never been in a place, like the whole place, from top to bottom, from that house to like the grounds to the tech building to like the inn where you stay, which is this beautiful like little village of homes. The whole place is built to foster inspiration and creativity in a way like I've never been anywhere else like it that feels this way. Like they've thought of so many ways to make sure that when creative people go there, all they have to do is think of and have great ideas.
Yeah.
It's so incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, and there's turkeys.
Yeah, there's wild turkeys. There's a fire department. It's
slightly scary, the turkeys.
There's a fire department.
I mean, most of the time I spend my time there thinking, how do I get to stay? And on that particular trip, not that there's been more.
So was there a second?
I was the last one to leave. leave, and I was standing on the guest house door steps, like, wait, I'll come back now. There you go. And I'm still actually still living there.
Yeah, it's a hologram.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I have never been to Skywalker.
That is the correct answer.
So were you all there just happenstance individually? You just put the pump at the end of
it? Yes. Yeah. Anyone can go.
You just go.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It's just like a random Tuesday. Hey, what are you doing here?
I popped out for milk. And then I had to find my wife and go, you know, I've done it again.
Tell them what.
Yeah.
We would not answer that at all. Like we were not supposed to.
So, was there anything else that you guys were able to do while you were at the ranch once or
watched
twice? You watched the film there?
You watched the film.
It was a good film.
What was it called?
It was about Star Wars.
Star Wars?
Was that Star Boy?
Yeah. And there was a princess.
Yeah. And it was like a galaxy right nearby, right?
Yeah, it was in the Broad Theater. It was in Broadway. It was in the theater where George Lucas wants to watch a movie.
This is getting painful.
And I was like, I could see details on the screen. Like, I've watched this movie hundreds of times. I was like, I never saw this. It was
it was amazing. And to be in that room, it's this beautiful Art Deco theater. Like, it's all the seats are like these beautiful kind of like turquoise velvet armchairs.
And very familiar statues.
Yes, the statues on the front on either side are the big six statues from Palpatine's office.
Oh my God!
Giant Oscars,
Sith Oscars.
Dwarky, I think. I don't know that story for something.
See, now I have in my head the idea of like Palpatine accepting best film editing.
So the first time we watched New Hope, and then if there was a second time, we might watch No Bus Rides Back. So.
Yeah, and they were the 4K restorations, which I think this is what Claudio was just saying. Like they were versions that you can't really see unless you're kind of there. So that's what everything was like. Where there was like everything you're doing, you can't do unless you're there. You just felt, I don't know, we're just not on the jerks, I think. It was amazing. You can't go. So inspiring, like all of that stuff is like the frosting on the cake of the ideas that we were not coming up with.
I'm sad I would like to go, Charles, and you guys are being very mean.
You're in the picture, just you know. Picture.
It's not me. It's us.
That's right. Okay.
Alright, so you were all at the ranch twice.
Yeah.
Not coincidentally.
Huh.
Right.
That's surprised.
But you can't say why you were there.
Trust tree.
What was it for a particular, No, let's not go that way. No, you know, let's, there's a line of dialogue that always resonates, and that's this one, or forces what gives a Jedi his power. And I think that line resonates with everyone up here. If we were to have gone to the ranch twice and maybe took some story meetings, we did speak a lot about what we liked from Star Wars, what we wanted to see from Star Wars, what excited us about Star Wars, a lot of what you guys heard today, and a lot of what we discussed went back to this scene and to this line in particular, So, the Force will give the Jedi's power. It's an energy field created by all living things.
What?
Until.
Dun dun dun.
So.
Now, what does that mean, right?
What does that mean?
Tell us.
Yeah.
No. Winner! No. We cannot say what that means.
Oh, Jesus.
What we can say is that Project Luminous is coming in 2020. We can say that it is all five authors.
I'm not going to tell you what the story is. We cannot tell you what the story is. We cannot tell you what the format is.
What?
We can tell you that there will be more news to come. We can tell you to...
It's just us in here.
Jedi Civil didn't give that away? Yes.
Yes,
Jedi. Yes, it is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. They are, all these all-star Star Wars authors are writing set in a galaxy far, far away. I didn't do it. Is there anything you guys can say about this?
It's
real big. Real big. Yeah.
It's bigger than a new band.
This is the band name.
This is the band.
This is the band name.
Would you guys like to see them sing in a band though?
Yes.
Okay, yep, yep. Like a celebration or a Comic-Con or something?
Can everyone stop speaking?
I was trying to convince us that he doesn't actually know how to play.
That is very exciting. He's a very good drummer.
He's an amazing drummer. Quite legendary.
It was his idea, really, to put everyone together into a band.
I mean, he's British.
He's going to kill us all.
But no, look, listen, what we wanted to say is this is a big deal. And this is something that we're already very, very proud of, already very, very excited about. We can't wait to share it with you guys properly. We ask for a little bit of patience. You know, because there might be one or two other big things going on in a galaxy far, far away this year. First ever live-action TV show, the Skywalker saga. But this is coming in 2020, and this is done specifically for you guys. You are who they're writing this stuff for, and we're really, really excited. We're really, really honored be able to do this. Thank you guys for reading. So Project Luminous is to come. Any last words before we wrap up for the day?
You know, I mean, the five of us have been working on this for a while, and it is so much fun to be working on it as the five of us. Like, this is not like we're each in our own little, like, we're doing this together, and it's been wonderful, really, really wonderful, because you know, what Claudia does, and how Steve does, and how Dan does, and how Cap does, and how I do. And so, like, finding the way that we can all make this beautiful thing together, it's, like, one of the best creative experiences I've ever had.
True. Yes. That's it. Boy, he's like...
Excellent. There may be... there's one more publishing panel later today. There's an IDW panel that Mr. Cap and Scott has done. There may be another announcement coming from that panel. It's not this. but seriously, we're doing this for you guys. We hope you enjoy it. We thank you for reading. We thank you for supporting all of these lovely folks. Enjoy the rest of the celebration. Have a great time.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is orchestral music composed by Christy Carew. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We would like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love What the Force, In Wild Space, Night Huntress, and Susan. We are available wherever podcasts are found and YouTube. You can connect with us at Twitter at WT4Show or on Facebook at What the Force. Feel free to reach out to us and start a conversation. Cheers.